Hey, Sai, you know
Hey,
what
Gabe.
my final fantasy is?
What's that?
Recording another episode of S-Rank Supports with you.
That
No!
was a
You
great,
know
that
who
was
that
great.
was an impression of, Sai?
Me?
That was Statler and Waldorf.
Oh, don't. I
And
can't
you know
even.
what they were doing on December 12th, 2024?
What's that?
They were at the Game of the Year Awards.
Oh,
Oh,
the Jeff Keighley Awards?
the Jeff Keighley Awards. And this may or may not pertain to us because we are a video games podcast. So I thought it might be worth taking a little bit of our time to recap
I'm trying
some
so
of
hard to
the.
figure out how to like contribute to what you're pulling off right now, and
You don't need to.
I'm just
Just
fumbling.
lay back and relax as we talk about the Game of Year Awards, the Game of the Year Awards 2024 on the S Rank Supports podcast. Welcome, everyone.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening.
Now, this is going to be a chill episode. Going to keep it relatively short. There's some controversy that we're going to get into in the later half, but we just want to have a quick casual chat about some of the fun stuff that the Game Awards got to do and some of the exciting announcements for new games that are coming out and who some of the nominees were for some games that Sai and I have played a mixture of. But yeah.
Collectively, if we took everything we've played together, we've played
One of them.
what? But yeah, I mean, full disclosure, I've seen a lot of the stuff from the Game Awards at one point or another. But Gabe's the only one that actually watched it himself. And so, rather than having like a super deep conversation about it, in one way or another, Gabe's kind of going to be informing me about what happened a little bit. And we'll also share some of our thoughts, some of our highlights. And if you've seen it yourself, you can listen, see what you think about our thoughts. If you agree, if you disagree, or if you haven't seen any of it, then this can be your information about the Game Awards. But
Well, I'll just walk you through some of the things that I thought were cool,
tell me all about it.
some highlights. I will tell you all about it. Maybe not all about it. I'll tell you most about it. Game of the Year winner, Astrobot.
Yes, sir.
I really want to play it. I actually got so funny story. I got Samantha, my girlfriend, Daniel, my brother. They asked me, Gabe, what do you want for Christmas? I'm like, well, I made the mistake of telling them both that I really wanted to play Metaphor Re-Fantasio. And so I ended up with two copies of
No
Metaphor
way.
Re-Fantasio for
You told
Christmas.
me you were
And
not interested in that game.
I was not. And then
Now you're twice as interested in
I w
it.
because you know why? Because when Samantha and I went to Japan in October, we stayed in Akasaka, and on the outside of Akasaka Station, there's a like wall-sized print of Metaphor Re-Fantasio with the
Yeah.
guy looking at me on my way to my back to my hotel like four times a day going like this. And I'm like, I want to punch you, but you're inanimate. And so therein lies my issue. But long story short,
One of the things Gabriel does is he puts little quotes as his status on Discord. I think that needs to be that's got to be it. Just want to throw that out there. I want to punch you, but
punch
you're
you,
inanimate.
you're inanimate. So let me get the point across.
Anyway,
Maybe
strong
I'll do that.
start,
I'll
but
do that when we release this episode. I'll do that. I'll put it in my calendar. Go change Discord status.
so if you're here day one to listen, you can go check that out. And you'll be in the know.
Oh yeah.
I'm super, just to kind of throw like jump in a little bit. I'm like
Yeah.
I'm so like happily surprised that it won. I saw all the footage and the trailers of the game. Astro has been like a really interesting talking point for PlayStation, like since the PlayStation 5 came out, because the PS5's had a really weird generation. And like, you know, I listened to a lot of stuff, people conversations industry wise.
Yeah.
And like people have been calling for like PlayStation to make a push to make Astro like a mascot. Like he's like got this such an awesome level of charm and likability, and he's been like a pack-in title for multiple consoles. He's like this ripe character for like being a pack-in thing, and then this game like blew things out of the water. And I knew it was good that people were liking it, but I did not expect it to win. I don't know about you, but
yeah, I didn't either. But it was, I heard this from my friend Chris. It was a nice, it winning Game of the Year is kind of a nice slap in the face for Sony, because Sony's been shutting down some rather successful studios. One studio that worked on like Bloodborne, for example. And then some of these developers have found their way to the studio that did Astrobot. And so it's kind of a nice, hopefully a little wake up call to like treat the studios with a little bit more care, I suppose, especially with the industry being so difficult right now with the layoffs and whatnot.
I just think it's such a great message that hopefully gets through to them that like games do not have to be these giant AAA budget 3D adventure games. Like Astrobot is a down to basics 3D platformer.
Yeah.
And it's awesome, and it beat things like Final Fantasy and Elden Ring, which we'll talk more about later, but you know, like
And I can't wait to play it. The other Game of the Year nominees, Balatro, great to see an indie title up there. Black Myth Wukong, Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and then Metaphor ReFantazio. Great collection of games. I've played half of them, working on getting to the others. Almost half of them. Some other Final Fantasy matched Balatro in terms of game like category category nominations.
Yeah, sheer number of categories they were nominated in, right?
Yes. Yeah. That was also a very successful game. I mean, the awards as a whole, I mean, the ceremony, just not, you know, including nominations and whatever, they were sort of there. It was kind of a hoot. They had some really fascinating guest stars, and we touched on this a little bit on our 2023 Game Awards episode, which we're saving for a little throwback in the future. But we've discussed how sometimes they have like strange speakers kind of come up, and some of them seem quite very not even adjacent to games, maybe a little distance from them. But the stars this time were pretty fun. The Harrison Ford, I think, comes out pretty early because they're celebrating Troy Baker being the new Indiana Jones.
Yep.
The Indiana Jones game, which I've heard pretty great things about.
Yep.
So it was kind of fun seeing him and them talking about like passing the torch and all that. I think Harrison Ford makes a joke. He's like, "Oh, if I knew he was going to do it that well, I just would have come back and done it myself." Which I thought was really funny.
Yeah, it's been really refreshing to hear people talking positively about this show, because the show's been around for just over a decade now, and I don't know, it seems like at the beginning it had its own identity, and then that identity kind of got swept under the rug once it became a bigger thing and was more about money, and that's been one of the big criticisms about it. In the past couple of years in particular, people just hated like how much fluff there was and how clear it was that, you know, Jeff Keighley was selling ad spots to people, and it was very fluffed out, and guests were on stage that were, people felt like we're just wasting their time. And it's like, but it's, you know, for example, we were just laughing about the Muppets being there. And it's like,
yeah,
it's like stuff like that just makes it feel more fun and more fluid. And people, yeah, definitely seem to be talking really positively.
They were one of the highlights of the show for me.
Yeah.
And just before I recorded this, I sent a video, a link to a Reddit thread where all Statler and Waldorf moments were stitched together in a short video. And one of the comments on that thread is Rule 35, if it exists, Statler and Waldorf can make it better. And that's exactly what happened with these.
If you haven't seen the clips of them from the Game Awards, you should go watch it. It's really funny.
Awesome.
I honestly feel like it's a genius move to just make the whole show more fun and lovable. Because, and like, just like the self-awareness that like Jeff Keighley is allowing them to like make fun of him and like call out the things that people have been mocking him for years. Like, I actually think it's a really smart move for like just making the show more appealing in general.
And more fun. I totally agree. Yeah. And it's like twice as funny because like Keighley, when they make half of the bits are like targeted towards Keighley, himself. And he just looks so like slightly uncomfortable, like kind of bashful about it, which just like adds to the whole thing because
that was Walter. This is the nature of that type of comedy. Just like own it. Just like, you know.
Yeah, just own it. The some of the jokes were excellent because they were like, some of them were like targeted game jokes where they were like, oh, my worst, one of those is like, oh, my worst nightmare is, or even worse than some nightmare I was having is another Final Fantasy game was like up for Game of the Year. And I'm like, that's such a great, jab. That's such a great jab at like a game focused kind of joke, you know? And I think if they brought them back in like the future, you know, for whatever, that would be amazing. Or it's just so great to like relief bits like that.
Yeah. It's just so awesome to have the show have a little bit more lighthearted of a feel and not be so serious like other award shows. Like it's video games and it's about fun. We're all here to enjoy them together. I think it's a really, really nice touch. But other than that, what were some of the other nominees and categories that stood out to you?
I think more so than just nominees and categories, the new Game Changer Award that they're doing is awesome. They awarded their first inaugural Game Changer Award to Amir Sattvat, who's like a huge game spokesperson in the community, and I see him posting on LinkedIn all the time. He's got like a huge massive amount of resources for people who are struggling to get like games or jobs in games. And like, I follow him and his community, and they did a little like expose or like whatever on just a short segment on like what he's accomplished and how he helps. And then people responding to that. And I teared up. I was like, wow, I didn't know I needed to hear this from the Game Awards. But like, as someone who wants to work in games and devote some of my life to games, is like, it was really nice to see that kind of respect and honor was being given to someone who genuinely cares. And that was fantastic.
Yeah, I found myself swept up in specifically the LinkedIn community as well, of people who are posting all that type of stuff. It's really cool. I mean, I'm sure that stuff has been there forever, but I don't know. It feels particularly important right now just because of all the stuff going on with projects getting funded or being too expensive and failing and layoffs and all that jazz. It's just a big mess. And I don't know. It feels like people kind of coming together for that is really cool.
For sure. There were really cool game announcements. Let's start with The Witcher 4.
Huge surprise for everyone, I feel like.
Pumped for that. Yeah. I've heard it. I heard that it was leaked. I was kind of aware that CD Projekt Red had begun full production. But I wasn't expecting a big announcement like that. And they had a full-blooded cinematic trailer for The Witcher 4 featuring Ciri, who is the bomb diggity. Let's just
the bomb diggity.
The bomb diggity.
That took the word right out of my mouth.
I know.
Have you played the other Witcher games at all, or at least three?
I have not, but I've read all the books. And
oh, you have? Wow.
I have, and three is on my, it's on my docket. Yep. And I cannot wait to play it and then enjoy four as it comes out. But
it's, yeah, the Witcher 3 has always felt like one of those gaming sins for me that like I've never played, but it's like,
yeah,
it feels like one of the things I need to play.
Yeah. And the Witcher 4 is, it's a little bit of a shift now because Geralt is not the main character.
That's right. You know,
yeah. It's going to be following Ciri's POV, which is super exciting. And I get news on my feed every once in a while where they're like asking Geralt's voice actor, like, all right, what's the deal? Are you in production? Have they called you? What are you doing? And, you know, he's giving as many non-answers as he can.
I'm sure that's exciting for you as someone that's read the books. I've seen the show. And so, like, it's, you know, it's a little bit different from the books, and that's a whole other conversation, but all the stuff going on with that show, but at least from what I know about like Ciri in that show, like this seems to be really cool. Like,
yeah,
I don't really care for all the drama people are making about the main character being a woman, like whatever, but that's annoying that people are making a big deal out of that. But for the story of The Witcher, like, it is so cool that she's now the protagonist of the story. And Ciri's awesome. So,
yeah,
I don't know what people are on about, but
I don't know what they're on about either. Cause there's significant themes of like feminism in The Witcher, like universe, and what Sapkowski like actually tries to explore thematically. Mm-hmm. Ciri coming into her own, strong mages being, you know, like masters of their own fate, like Yennefer and whatnot. And so, yeah, that's a little weird that I haven't heard of people having those kind of conversations, luckily, because I feel like that would just frustrate
me. It's kind of a bummer, that's for sure.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, looking at this list that I got in front of me a little bit, some of the other big things that stood out to me were a Slay the Spire.
Second Slay the Spire.
That game has been out forever, but I only recently like really got into it in the past year. I've played a lot of it. I've beaten most of it. And hopefully no one listening actually like really knows that game, because they'll know that that's a huge exaggeration. But like the base level of things, I've played a lot of that game. I haven't played The Long Dark myself. It's something I really want to play. They announced like the kind of sequel to that game, semi-sequel. One of my siblings actually is like really into The Long Dark. They've actually been making a ton of content on YouTube about that new game coming out, Black Frost. That's really cool.
Onimusha looks really cool. Is it Split Fiction? That's Haze Light Studios' new game.
That
did It Takes Two. It Takes Two and A Way Out is Haze Light Studios. They're really like couch co-op. They've almost perfected the couch co-op formula.
Well, and their whole thing is it's not a couch co-op option. It's they build games that are all about two people playing a game.
It has to be two people playing.
Yeah, it's not some extra mode. It's like they've really perfected like building games to be for that. Super exciting that they announced that, because I think It Takes Two was announced, or was nominated, I think, or did it win as well? One of these years. That's a distant memory of mine. I don't remember, but anyway,
it was really successful at one game awards.
Yeah, 2021. They won Game of the Year. Which is huge.
Yeah.
Beat things like Resident Evil and Metroid Dread and all these things. So they mean business for sure.
For sure.
Really, really exciting. The Okami sequel is a big deal. It's such like it's not a cult classic, but it's just one of those things that like it feels old enough now that you have to be someone that's in the know or has played the game and really knows it. And
yeah,
it seems like one of those things that we were never going to get more of. It's a huge, huge thing. That Elden Ring spinoff game surprised a ton of people.
Going to bring that up.
Yeah. You want to talk about that?
It's a weird announcement. It's just a weird announcement. I feel like it came out and everyone looked at each other and was like, We didn't ask for this.
I've seen Elden Ring fans and FromSoft fans just freaking out with excitement because it's.
Oh yeah.
Well, people seem excited because it's, as far as I can tell, I don't really know a ton about it, but it's essentially another game in the same Elden Ring world, but it's got different mechanics and it's, I really don't know how the mechanics in the game work, but apparently the motion is different and that I guess it's perhaps a more simplified or more approachable version of the game, but it's different gameplay loop and everything. Seems like a really big deal. People are excited about that.
That's good. I haven't heard a lot of the general. I haven't been following the public opinion, mostly because I don't get FromSoft stuff. I don't follow it too closely. But that's super exciting. And then the magnum opus of game announcements, maybe not the magnum opus, but the big one that the Game Awards ended with was Intergalactic: The Heretic Prophet. Now, people have been waiting for Naughty Dog to buckle down and pick a new IP and roll with it. Especially after The Last of Us, because they've been writing the coattails of The Last of Us and Uncharted for a while now.
Yeah, well, the main issue and the great thing about this is they were several years ago. Sony kind of started this whole initiative to be developing several live service games at the same time, because the whole industry has been all about live service and all these big companies are pushing for that. And so they were apparently working on a Last of Us
multiplayer game
that got canceled at some point. And so for, I think, a couple of years now, at least, people have been no one's known what Naughty Dog's been working on. We've been waiting to hear what they've been doing. So this is a big deal. It's a big sci-fi adventure game that we got a little bit of a teaser about. Super exciting to be seeing
that. I've heard mixed things on it. I personally was I was kind of excited because I wasn't expecting them. I genuinely wasn't expecting them to actually announce a new IP. I think it's bold move, but super very refreshing.
Yeah.
When they announced at the Game Awards that Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross will be doing the score, which is power composer duo.
Yeah.
Everyone loves them. They specialize in that 80s sort of synthesizer sounds, but making it modern. So it's kind of the perfect 80s pop punk thing that Intergalactic is going for, even with just the font for the game. So crazy. On the other hand, I know people are a little... they're worried. There's a little anxiety because I know a lot of people don't like Neil Druckmann, the director of a lot of Naughty Dog's games. And so there's that worry that maybe it's going to go in a weird direction. And we recorded an episode on The Last of Us Part 2, which will be coming a few weeks after we release this episode, if everything stays on schedule. And I think we touch on that quite a bit. It's Last of Us Part 2 is what it is. And it does something very different. And you kind of have to meet it where it is to appreciate it. And that, but some people can't, take that. Some people need more of the first Last of Us and something that's maybe not too drastic of a shift. And so it's interesting question going into Intergalactic: The Heretic Prophet is, how different is it going to be when there's no prequel or first game? It's not a sequel. So there's no first game or first project in this IP to compare it to. No baseline, So is it going to be better? Is it going to be the new original Last of Us? Or is it going to be something even worse, something?
I think no matter what, it'll be different. It's always exciting to have a fresh slate for somebody creatively, I think. We'll be excited to see what they're cooking up.
Me too. But yeah, I would say that covers it for, the bulk of the winners, nominees, some exciting announcements. But something we've been wanting to talk about, unless there's anything you wanted to discuss about the actual ceremony or its content before we move on, is the nomination of Elden Ring Shadow of the Erdtree as Game of the Year contender for Game of the Year 2024. And that sparked some controversy because it is DLC. It's downloadable content. Mm-hmm. It's additional stuff that someone can buy as an addendum or addition to a base game. And have we gotten DLC as like a nomination at these kinds of things?
No, yet? And that's why this is the big thing this year, is that this is the first time something like that has ever happened.
Yeah,
it's been a huge issue. And I think one of the, it's separate but related issue in the nominees this year in general, is, and every year people always have things to complain about with the nominees. This is not new. But every year it seems like there's some new thing that, some new scenario that pops up that stirs the pot. And one of the big things this year was it appeared that compared to other years, the games that occupied the Game of the Year nominees were also heavily prevalent in all these other categories. So then this big question comes up of why is that the case? If only one game is going to win Game of the Year, whatever the game that is, the people that didn't win, that means all these other categories are already spoken for, theoretically, right? Like if something's nominated for the best game of the year and it's nominated in this other category, if it doesn't win Game of the Year, then it has to win that other category, right? Because then if it doesn't win that one either, then why was it nominated for Game of the Year?
Oh, right.
So there's all these different tiers going on.
Also, if it's nominated for Game of the Year and it's nominated for one of these other categories, then it should also presumably win that category because it won Game of the Year. So maybe it did
exactly
that, like, perfectly.
So there's this whole weird,
what's their metric?
Yeah, there's this whole weird balance thing of like, okay, we have all this stuff nominated for Game of the Year, and there's, I think, let me try to figure out which one. I think it was Best Direction. There's one category that is identical to the Game of the Year nominees. I think I'm trying to find it real quick, but I think it's Best Direction.
Best Game Direct. Yeah, it's the same.
Yeah, so that's the shining example. But it's like, so it's like, okay, why are all the Game of the Year nominees, like, are these the only things winning awards this year? You know, so it's just really, that seemed really prevalent this year, and that was the main issue. But then the more popular controversy, if you will, above that was this idea of Elden Ring, which is a game present at a different Game of the Year award event because it came out in that year. Now downloadable content from that game is being nominated for Game of the Year in a year the base game didn't come out in, right?
Right.
So, yeah, you and I have been wanting to talk a little bit about this for a while. And, you know, I'm sure we're not going to be saying anything that hasn't been said before, but this is a good chance just sharing our thoughts. But I don't know if you want to start things off. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely probably not going to say anything groundbreaking. I mean, this talk has been going on for a little bit now, and it was surrounding the Game Awards, you know, after the announcements. I guess the million-dollar question here is, what warrants new content?
Totally.
You know, and how big does it have to be to sell itself as that? Mm-hmm. I read somewhere that someone was saying, well, since they added Shadow of the Erdtree as DLC, that means all of this other very substantial DLC should have been considered prior. One of the examples they listed was Xenoblade 3 Future Redeemed, which I'm a huge fan of.
Right.
I love that DLC.
And you and me both?
Yeah. And it's substantial, I would argue. And so as soon as I learned that that was discounted, but then Elden Ring got in like a year later, year or two later, I was like, I turned into one of those cinephile like snobs. Mm-hmm. who are going into like the Oscars and being like, I don't care who wins, I just need Emilia Perez to lose. I am like the same going. Yeah. I was pretty much the same going into Game of the Year. I was like, I don't care who wins. I just need Elden Ring DLC to lose because it's already had its time in the spotlight.
Yeah, and you and a lot of other people, I think.
Yeah, and I feel like this is the, with its inclusion for Game of the Year, this is like, I'm worried that the floodgates have now been opened and now it's almost sort of a crawl, maybe like anything goes. And I'm pretty sure it won't turn into something like that. I know that the argument defending Shadow of the Erdtree is like, well, the DLC is just so darn big.
Right.
And there's just so much darn new content that it warrants it.
The other main point about it that people who are like in support of this are like, yeah, the size of it, the like time wise that you spend in the game, like it's about as like it's about as much content as it would be as the base game is. And so then it raises questions like, okay, is the only criteria for this being considered for Game of the Year is like it just needs a different title? Like, still, like where's the boundary? Like, how much does this matter? Like, does it matter?
Because a game can take place in the same world and have more content, updated mechanics, and tell a little bit of a different story.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, well, I would argue that's the same thing as what Shadow of the Erdtree did, I suppose.
Right.
We usually call those things like Last of Us 2 or Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth. You know, that's like, it's the same. I think that's a comparable example, is it's the same universe. You're picking up where you left off in the story because your first game wasn't done. And your foundation is the same, except there's some new enemies, a few more playable characters, and some new locations.
Yeah.
So, and that's eligible because we call that another game. So I wonder if they released, by that logic, I mean, Shadow of the Erdtree is its own thing. You know, they just released it as DLC and not, you know, a stupid like re-release that maybe Atlus would do when they do Persona 5 Royal or Persona 4 Golden, where it's the same thing plus one dungeon. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the issue is like there's ways to justify both sides of it. Like, for one of the things, like, I mean, just to be clear too, like I think it's wrong that it's like in the category personally.
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel the same way overall. It seems like maybe you do.
I do, but in talking just now, I've like explained to myself why it's okay. So yeah, it's like why does it still feel wrong?
Totally.
It's like, why does it still feel wrong?
Like, for me, one of the nails in the coffin is like simply the idea that you can't just start the DLC like from wherever you want. You actually like have to be in a certain point in the base game to start the DLC. I did not know
this.
So it's like the difference is that this isn't a totally separate thing. This is like literally an attachment to the base game. It's downloadable content. It's extra content, right? So this is like, that's one of the main talking points that people are bringing up. For me, like during this whole debacle, I've kind of like realized for myself that I think the main split, from my perspective, seems to be like that I think some people, I think it totally depends on how you think of what the Game of the Year award is. And I think in my mind, I've thought of two possibilities. I think you could either think of it as, I think this is the best gaming experience that came out this year, period.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
I think that's one valid way to look at it. And I think that's how a lot of people think about it. The other thing I thought of that I think this is much more in the camp that I feel about things in is the Game of the Year award is given to the gaming, to the game that represents gaming this year the most. Like, this is the game of this year. It's not the game of the year. It's the game of this year, 2024. Like, what is the game
that will represent this year when we look back on it?
Yeah, that was the most popular, that broke the most boundaries, that surprised the most people. Like whatever it is. And that's what all these categories are really for, right? But like,
yeah,
this big one feels so much more impactful because it's representing everything. And it gets blown up to be that way, right? But I don't know. In my mind, I just think those are two really like closely related but really distinct ways of thinking about it.
Yeah.
I think like, yeah, if I haven't played Shadow of the Erdtree. I barely played any of Elden Ring. I'm not good at it, and I probably will never play it. That's a whole other conversation. But I'm not doubting anybody that believes that Shadow of the Erdtree is so dang good that it is like better than anything else that came out this year. I mean, that's how people felt about Elden Ring when it came out. Like, I believe it. I totally believe you. Is it the thing that defines gaming in 2024? Like, I don't know, man. I don't know about that one.
Because by that logic, I would say Balatro.
Like,
super strong contender for that. Like, and it feels like thematically relevant because part of the show was dedicating the Game Changer Award to this guy who's like helping people cope with the layoffs and how hard the industry is, people losing funding, and Sony and other companies being obsessed that you need like the absolute best 3D assets at high fidelity to sell a project visually. And then this one guy comes out of his garage, I say playfully and in quotes, you know, with a fantastic game of just cards. And it's like, that's kind of what I want to sort of represent my gaming experience. That, or like a fantastic Chinese studio making a great combat game while exploring really cool cult like mythology from Chinese culture. And that's Black Myth Wukong, you know, that's something we have not gotten a lot of, and they did well. Metaphor ReFantazio, that's a little bit more of a stretch because it's coming very much from a successful turn-based JRPG camp that is the Persona SMT Shin Megami Tensei sort of world, but took that and then elevated it like a lot of games before them. And so there's that idea that, you know, if you're stepping in and elevating an experience that's already there, then I want that to kind of signify, you know, what's most important for a year's worth of growth and development. And I guess that starts to circle back around to where we left off the Shadow of the Erdtree DLC conversation, because by that logic, it is expanding on a given experience, but the core was so established that it is less new. And maybe that's what we're talking about, is that that experience was just less new than the others. You know, I don't know if you can think about it kind of that way or what.
No, I totally see what you're saying. It's like, I don't know. It's one of those things that is in such a fine gray area that like the simplest like changing of phrasing or wording can like kind of swing me one way or the other. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, even just the idea of like if I was to go down the line and ask the question for each game, is this a 2024 game? I like, you can't like literal objective word wise, you can't actually say that Elden Ring Shadow of the Erdtree is a 2024 game, because it's not. It's a 2024 DLC expansion that was released. It's like, that's why you're never going to see a World of Warcraft or something like expansion that comes out nominated for Game of the Year or something. I don't know. It's like, it seems easier to make the arguments like about this type of stuff when you're looking at something that seems obvious to everyone, but then something like this is in a weird gray area. Yeah. I don't know, man. Like,
yeah. And I can see people getting like really fired up about this, because if you're an Elden Ring enjoyer and they release Elden Ring 2.0, but they release it as DLC, and it's just more great content for a game that was fantastic when it first came out, I would be happy. I'm like, this is what, I don't know what the DLC cost for Shadow of the Erdtree, but it couldn't have been more than $25 max, maybe.
I think
It's 40.
40 or
so. 50. That's less than the retail price for a full game. Because you can charge the latest PlayStation 5 game for like $70 now or something right off the shelf, right? So the fact that that's offered to you as DLC as an addition for, I mean, 40 is kind of steep. So maybe it's not that much of a boast, but I can see other games doing, you know, much worse, or doing the Persona style, which is add one dungeon and that constitutes an additional $70. And you just hope that the content they include warrants that. And I can appreciate that Shadow of the Erdtree doesn't do that. And so if I were in an Elden Ring enjoyer and this DLC came out at decent-ish DLC price that's less than the full retail price, like I paid for the original game and offers almost double the content, and it's something I truly enjoyed, I'd want it to get quite a lot of recognition, you know, and I would definitely defend it. I wonder if the conversation would be different if, like, we, either one of us, were like super passionate FromSoft nerds with a love for Elden Ring and have completely played Shadow of the Erdtree all the way through, as well as the base game. How we would feel about it at that point. Yeah. But
I wonder.
Yeah. As you say, it's a fine gray area.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what's funny about this whole anecdote we're talking about is, you know, as of recording this, just in this past week, we had our Tears of the Kingdom episode release.
Yeah, we did.
Where we discussed the idea of it being more of DLC than a separate game. Tears of the Kingdom was nominated for Game of the Year last year. But there were no issues with that. Is it because it was announced as it was released as a full separate game? You talked about pricing. If it was, it came out at $70, which is $10 more than from Breath of the Wild was. I don't know. Just throwing that out there, but
that's interesting parallel. Like, what warrants like a new name and a new release? The fact that the environment's different, that there's new enemies, that there's, you know, that's a really good comparison that I might have to mull over a little bit more.
I mean, I think, I don't know, something like the idea of an experience is just such a subjective thing. I think that's where a lot of the issue comes down to. Yeah. I mean, the fact that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth was nominated is like, that's a remake of a game, which we have separate categories
for. And it's not even a full remake. It's the second part in a trilogy of a remake.
Right. And so, like, game. That's another weird gray area, right? Because it's a new game. It's a totally new experience, but it's of something that technically more or less already exists, like in concept, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, something like that, there seems to be no debate about it being considered something separate of its own nature, but I don't know.
And that's strange, isn't it? Because it's just the original story. And in terms of a remake, it's definitely its own standalone game, because so much of it has been revamped, filled in, flushed out, and improved. So much of it. I mean, that part is not even a question.
Right.
What is a question is they could not release it in three parts and just have a giant game that takes up the entire SSD of your and PlayStation 5's internal drive.
Yep.
And they could have called it Final Fantasy VII Remake with all three parts. And that would also be a game. You know. But Rebirth is part two. It's part two of this greater experience, and that's up there for a nomination.
But screw Elden Ring, right?
Yeah, screw Elden Ring.
It's a bad game anyway.
Yeah.
That can be my... just
alienated our FromSoft listeners.
That can be my controversial take.
Your hot take is...
to rage bait people.
Stinks. We gotta get the YouTube account up and running so our thumbnail can be like, why Elden Ring sucks, and then size
this guy hates signs. Elden Ring.
This guy hates Elden
Ring. This guy can't beat the rats in the first 30 minutes of the game. Man.
That's so funny. Hey, I respect Elden Ring. That is a tough game. I enjoyed it.
I respect people that play those games and
good at it. But you don't. Them. But do you respect the game?
I don't. I've not played it enough. I don't know. It's not like I've played those games and have played enough for me to be like, okay, I can tell I'm not good at this. I respect the game for what it is, but it's clearly not for me.
Yeah.
I know it's not for me, and I simply know it's not for me so much that I can't even get through enough of the game to even form an opinion about it. Like, it's
you can't express how much you know that
people
it's
can
not
tell me to get good
tea.
As much as they want. I'm sorry, I can't. I
you know,
yeah. I'm not good at them. I guess. Yeah.
What if I gave you a FromSoft game for our next game swap? How would that make you feel?
You're really mean. If you're really mean, I don't even have anything else to say. That would be really mean. Because I would feel obligated to play it as your friend and for this show. And
I know.
And
the power I wield over you.
The power you wield.
Whether or not to make you finish Elden Ring.
No. No thanks.
We just recorded our episode on Sifu. Sifu's a difficult game.
It's a very different type of game. You are trying so hard to weasel your way around this. That's enough
for
you.
I'm just playing devil's advocate for you. Yeah, I don't truly have a passionate opinion, but if I was being honest, I'm glad we got to cover both takes of this argument, because I'm still on the side of it should not have been nominated as Game of the Year. And I think the way we described it earlier, or at least the way I described it, was like, we have explored why technically it is okay, but mm-hmm. it still feels wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I'm leaving this conversation.
Totally.
It still feels wrong for some weird reason. And I hope they put great care into what DLCs they are considering nominating as their own games going forward.
I'm sure you feel the same way as me. I would love to be convinced otherwise. I'm super curious. Yeah. It's a weird conversation. If there's anyone listening to this that has ideas or wants to chime in,
please comment.
Let us know.
Send us an email.
We'd love to hear.
Find us on social media and just flame us, because we want to know. We want to know.
Tell me how to beat the rats.
Don't let the rats get you down, Si.
Down in the dungeon where they creep and crawl. It's a good line. Bars. Ooh.
Oh, you should write that down.
Write that down.
All right, man. Well, did this conversation justice?
I think so. Gaming year. Let us know if there's anything we didn't talk about. What were your highlights? And yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.
To you.
To me?
Oh, to me.
Aww.
Aww. To me.